All right, we keep this college basketball train rolling down the tracks here as we bring on Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, regular contributor to VSiN and the Point Spread Weekly newsletter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Going well, Adam, man. And in light of all the times and all the different events either being postponed or canceled or changed in terms of fans being able to be there or not be there. So, look, that's what we do, man. We discuss the games on the board until they're canceled.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we can do. And in fact, speaking of cancellations, you and I were talking for about 20 minutes before we actually hit the record button here. And just coming out a couple minutes before we started recording that the CBI has been canceled, which means that probably the CIT not far behind. And who knows, maybe even the NIT not that far behind. And again, we're a sports betting show, as I talked about on yesterday's edition with Brian Blessing. So, I mean, look, those are some great betting opportunities coming off the board. And again, obviously, I understand that there are much larger implications nationally and worldwide with this. But, I mean, look, you know, those are postseason tournaments that, you know, were pretty good betting opportunities for us. And if that's the start, I mean, I that's just the tip of the iceberg. God only knows what the rest of it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. And that CBI thing just came across the wire about 15 minutes ago. And CBI, look, they're all campus site games, much like the College Insider Tournament and pretty much the NIT until you get to that Final Four in New York City at Madison Square Garden. So, look, it's just something new, it seems like, is breaking every hour on this thing. And we saw that the MAC and the Big West tournaments were not going to allow spectators, only credentialed personnel with the various teams were going to be allowed at these events. So, yeah, things are changing rapidly. So just keep attuned to the news, I guess, is all we can do.
Well, and of course, as the news always is, it just seems to be bad news kind of everywhere. And, you know, San Francisco banning gatherings of more than 1,000 people. That would obviously include Warriors games, but also we're 15 days away from opening day. So Major League Baseball, obviously big gatherings there with that, albeit open air, which is something we really haven't seen canceled yet outside of like South by Southwest or Coachella or something like that. But again, I mean, like you said, all we can kind of do is talk about what's there in front of us and, you know, maybe not necessarily speculate too much into the future. But I guess what's there in front of us for right now is the Big Ten Conference Tournament. Wisconsin, the number one seed, Michigan State, the two seed and the favorite, Maryland, the three seed. They're the second favorite. Seeing Wisconsin take some money here because, quite frankly, their draw taking on Illinois or Iowa in the semifinals, probably the best of the top seeds here in this conference tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this Big Ten tournament actually is very wide open when you look at it, because who would have thunk that Wisconsin was going to end up being the number one seed, even though it was a three-way share with Michigan State and Maryland. Greg Gard, well-deserved as the coach of the year to have not only lose Ethan Happ, who we know when we look at these different advanced metrics for college basketball is one of the most high-usage players in all of college basketball last year. He graduates. Kobe King quits the team in January. And this is a Wisconsin team that didn't have anybody on the first or second team in the Big Ten conference, all conference teams, and still managed to get a share of the title in the one seed. So, yeah, I think that this is very wide open. The team that I actually bet on the future here, I got them at around 12-1, was Ohio State, who's the seventh seed. This was an Ohio State team, and they're in the bottom half of the draw. So Big Ten is one of those tournaments probably where you can maybe take one team in each end of the draw and see and maybe hope that you get both there, or you at least hope you can get both to the semifinals for perhaps a hedging opportunity. But I liked Ohio State simply because this was a team that was almost number one in the country at one point. We're really knocking on the door at one point. Now you're getting them as a seven seed. I know that they lost to Michigan State on senior day, but they had won four in a row. They had all of a sudden gotten it together. They play very good defense, very well coached by Chris Holtman. So that's the team I made a case for, but I've seen people make a case for Illinois. I skirted Illinois a little bit because I think that they're still a little young, and this is kind of a brave new world for them to be a good team after they've been kind of struggling the last few years. Kind of the same with Michigan. First time Juwan Howard has coached in this type of tournament. So I didn't use them either. But a lot of people are going to gravitate to Michigan State because, look, they've won a few in a row. This is Tom Izzo in March. How many times are we going to hear that from people? So, yeah, Ohio State was actually my choice here for this league.
Yeah, you know, it's so tough because, again, like you said, there are so many teams that have a legitimate chance at winning this. And, I mean, Michigan, a team that's made runs from off the pace before. You know, you remember their run as a number 8 seed, what was it, 3 years ago, I think?
Yeah.
You know, so they kind of have that reputation, but that was also with John Beilein. That was with a little bit of a different team. I think Michigan's in a tough spot. If they don't lose to Rutgers, I could very easily see them going down to Wisconsin. The team I took a chance on here is actually Iowa. And I think that, you know, a money line rollover is probably a little bit, well, not anymore. With their price getting pushed down a little bit, they were in the 8-1 range. Now they're a little bit better than 10-1, probably in line with where a money line rollover would fall with them. Maybe a little bit less than that. So maybe the money line rollover still the play there, but they're very good offensively. I know they're bad defensively, but they're very, very good offensively. And I kind of like a high offensive ceiling in a wide open conference tournament like this. Now it is tough to play that way for 4 games in 4 days. I totally get that, but I think Wisconsin is a weaker number one seed. They're not even top 3 in the conference in adjusted offensive or defensive efficiency. So I stay away from Michigan State, stay away from Maryland, stay away from Ohio State and Penn State. So I do like Iowa a little bit here, but something you mentioned is very interesting to me. And I talked about this in the first segment with Brad Powers. When you're handicapping these conference tournaments, is it the full body of work? Is it the full body of work in conference play? Or is it the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to see how these teams are playing as they're going into the postseason that you really hone in on?
Yeah, exactly. You're not really sure which, because certain teams obviously peaked in November and December and haven't done so in February and March and also vice versa. But yeah, with the way that this is seeded too, I mean, I've even seen people take flyers on Minnesota and Indiana. Now that might be a little much considering they got to play the first night tonight. And essentially, if you're going to have to win this thing in Indianapolis, they're going to end up playing 5 straight games just to win the tournament. You'd have to play 4 games before you get to the final. So it's so hard to take these teams. But look, Indiana and Minnesota have both beaten really good teams and top teams in this league. So, yeah, everybody's beat up on everybody. 14-6 was the winning record here. In the Big Ten in terms of the conference championship, that 3-way tie up top. So, yeah, I could totally sponsor, going back to your point on Iowa, they're a really good shooting team, and they're the best offense in the conference. The defense, not so much, but look, teams get hot from the 3 in these things over a 3-4 day span. So, I could certainly sponsor Iowa in that. I went ahead and took Ohio State because, look, they're the best 3-point shooting team in conference play. The defense has slipped a little bit. They don't give up a lot of rebounds. The defense has probably slipped a little bit because of the depth issue. They still don't have DJ Carton back with the team. I don't think he's going to be back with them. So that's what has slipped. But this is a wide-open tournament, and I don't think you just necessarily want to go chalk here.
Well, and as we look at this thing, you know, I don't think any of the bottom 4 seeds really have a run in them. I know Minnesota lost a ton of close games. They'd be the team, I guess, you'd kind of have to take a look at.
They can maybe get to Friday or something, or maybe somehow get to the semifinals on Saturday before they run out of gas. I could see both those scenarios being plausible for Minnesota or Indiana. I just can't see them winning 5 games.
Right, neither can I. So you've got the 5 through 10 seeds, you know, playing here in the second round, and that means 4 games in 4 days. And this back-to-back format, unique to conference tournaments and also those early season showcase tournaments, what does that do for you in terms of game-by-game handicapping?
Yeah, and I mean, from a future standpoint, it provides some hedging opportunities. If I mean, you obviously have to watch the play to see how it's going to shake out. But Yeah, usually what I like to do in these tournaments, I usually like, especially in the first half. Now, I don't do this blindly because you got to go situation by situation and account for any injuries that pop up and whatnot. And then obviously the circumstances of the games being played. But usually what I like to do, and you kind of saw it a little bit, I'll use the Mountain West as an example last week. Air Force has to play that first day against, I believe it was Fresno State. Air Force gets the win. So they're the 8 seed or the 9 seed against San Diego State. And I played Air Force in the first half because San Diego State's that 1 seed that has to play at 11:30. So it's an earlier tip off. Air Force had played the early game the day before. And I like to play the team that played the day before, especially the first or second time. Now, as you get deeper in the tournament, that scenario really doesn't matter as much when you get to those semifinals and final rounds. But in that first and second round, playing against the rested team, especially in the first half, because the team that has played has already had to go through and play a game. And so they've already gotten their jitters out. Now, this other team they play that's rested has the first game jitters. And you often see a much more competitive first half, at least, and more often than not, full game.
All right, so let's take some time here and move over to the Big East, because I want to make sure we got some time to talk to Players Championship here down at TPC Sawgrass. But the Big East is another one, man. I mean, it's just like the Big 12 in the sense that, you know, I don't think 9 teams can win it, but I think 6 teams could conceivably win it, maybe 7, depending on your view of Xavier. Creighton the favorite, but they're missing a really big piece now in Zegarowski. And in fact, Creighton may not be the favorite anymore out there in a lot of different places. You've got Villanova and Seton Hall that both tied for the regular season crown. Creighton got it based on tiebreakers. You've got a Butler team that's dangerous, a Providence team that came in playing as well as anybody. Ed Cooley getting his team back into the field with that late surge. Marquette, depending on your view of Miles Powell, may have the best player in the conference in Marcus Howard. Again, wide open at MSG.
Yeah, it really is. And I'll start with the top of the bracket. I think, look, with Zegarowski out, and he may be back for the NCAA tournament. That's what the rumored prognosis is going to be. But he is going to miss the Big East tournament in Madison Square Garden. So I think Creighton in that first game, they win over the 8-9, which would be either St. John's or Georgetown, kind of that rally without one of your best players or one of your key guys in that first game. But this is obviously, in this tournament, I think, a very vulnerable number one seed. So I think that winner of the Butler-Providence game in the 5-4, good chance they're going to end up in the final in the Big East tournament. And I'm going to go with Butler to emerge from that. I know everybody's on Providence in that spot because they did win 6 games in a row. This team on Valentine's Day, 13-12, 6-6 in the league, probably not in the NCAA tournament, and they riff off 6 in a row. But eventually those streaks come to an end where you kind of hit that wall a little bit. And I think maybe Providence does that in this spot. They split the season series. Actually, both road teams won in the pair of games with Butler and Providence. And look, Butler kind of hit a rough spell starting mid-January and then kind of into the middle of February. But they did win their last 3 games. I know 2 of them were against DePaul and St. John's at home. But maybe they kind of found their legs again. So I took Butler actually at about plus 550 to win the Big East tournament. And then on the bottom half, Seton Hall has been very good in this tournament. And when you got a big-time scorer like Powell, which Marquette, of course, does with Marcus Howard, Seton Hall would be the team I'd be looking at the bottom half of the draw, though.
Yeah, I like Seton Hall at the bottom half, too, here. I think they're plus 340 out there at some places. You could probably find better. Make sure you shop around for the best prices, as always, here. I kind of like St. John's over Creighton. If St. John's beats Georgetown, St. John's highest turnover percentage on defense, lowest turnover percentage on offense, so they take good care of the basketball. They get extra possessions. They just don't shoot it very well. Creighton going to MSG, a place where it's very, very hard to shoot. I don't know how this tournament will be attended, given everything going on in the Big Apple here with coronavirus and everything else. That'll be kind of interesting to keep an eye on, but it's already a bad shooting environment anyway. So I kind of worry about that for Creighton, but I like Seton Hall here. I think Seton Hall, they get a chance to wipe the slate clean. You know, they did not finish the regular season well. So now you kind of give them a little bit more incentive. I don't think Jay Wright needs to prove anything. I don't think Creighton's worried about proving anything without Zagorowski. I think that Seton Hall, you know, maybe kind of wants to win this thing. And that's not to say that, you know, that these teams want to lose. Obviously, you know, these teams want to win any banner that they can. I think Seton Hall is just maybe a little bit more motivated than everything else. Not to mention, Villanova does not get much from their bench at all whatsoever. So if I'm Jay Wright and I don't have to play three games in 3 days, I'm kind of okay with that.
Yeah, exactly, because that's kind of what works out. Look, these conference tournaments provide you the opportunity to get a trophy and provide you the opportunity to get a championship. And obviously that matters in bonuses for coaches' contracts and whatnot. So these guys want to win these things, but sometimes they could work against you because all of a sudden you win a conference tournament. Usually those are teams in the NCAA tournament. At least more often than not, it's going to depend on the draw and the individual games and scenarios. But more often than not, I kind of want to go against those teams that have had to play 4 and 5 games to win a conference tournament and then have to turn around, especially if they got to play on Thursday and their conference tournaments end Saturday or Sunday. So, you know, it's still a pretty quick turnaround, even when you have 4 or 5 days in between. And some of these teams can just run out of gas at the end of the season.
Especially if you get sent a long way from home. You know, right. If you're in the Big East, you get sent to California or you get sent to Spokane or, you know, Salt Lake City or something like that. You know, I don't know where all the regionals are being held, but just using those as an example where maybe you go play in elevation or maybe you go play 3 time zones away or something like that. That's still tricky. And you know, obviously now you've got all the travel considerations with coronavirus and, you know, people having different worry levels about that and all that type of thing. But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things that go into these conference tournaments and into the minds of these coaches as well to where, you know, maybe Villanova's in a close game with Seton Hall and maybe they don't play their regular guys 38 minutes or something like that. You know, that could have an impact on how these conference tournaments wind up going. But one last quick point I wanted to make here. I know we kind of started sort of doom and gloom with the cancellation of the CBI. That's not actually run by the NCAA. So maybe this one's kind of a different type of animal. And also, too, a lot of financial considerations with that because these teams kind of have to pay their own way to travel. It's sparsely attended anyway. But still, it's still, you know, maybe a gateway into other things being canceled. Maybe the NIT does go on as planned. But maybe something like the CIT doesn't, where these teams don't really sell their allotment of tickets usually anyway.
Right. The NIT is owned by the NCAA now. So I would think that's going to continue to go on. The Gazelle Group owns the CBI. And then I forget, College Insider runs the College Insider tournament. So those games are all campus site games. Much like the NIT games are until you get to New York City and Madison Square Garden for the semifinals and the eventual championship game. So, yeah, a lot of this is probably, look, you can't really conduct it. That's why I'm surprised the CBI did it so early, because you can't really conduct it with campuses because different universities right now have different restrictions for this coronavirus. Some of them are business as usual. Some of them are doing online or remote type of classes with the technology that we have now today. So it's very hard to consult with all these schools because you don't know which schools yet are going to be in these tournaments.
And the thing that's crazy to me, and again, you and I talked about this before we started recording here, you know, the MAC tournament being played in an empty arena in Cleveland on Sunday in Cleveland, the minor league hockey team plays an afternoon game. And as of now, everything is on as scheduled with fans in attendance and all that. So nobody can attend the MAC tournament for 3 days, but then Sunday it's okay for everyone to go to this minor league hockey game. It's just, it's crazy confusing. What's being canceled and what isn't and where fans can show up and where they can't. And to me, sort of reading between the lines a little bit, knowing that Cleveland hosts a regional next week for March Madness, you can't have an empty building for one NCAA event and then a building full of fans for another.
Right.
So I don't know how all of this is going to play out, but man, This is going to be crazy for the NCAA tournament. We'll be able to talk about this next week with Wes when we have some more clarity on it. But just, you know, the first four could have to be moved out of Dayton. It's, you know, you got to play everything by ear. And the problem is, from a betting standpoint, again, this creates so much uncertainty that, you know, you think about the Big 12 tournament, for example, that we talked about in the first segment with Brad Powers. Like, are Kansas fans literally going to be the only ones that go because it's a short drive from Lawrence? I mean, how many points of home court is that worth all of a sudden for Kansas? You know, yeah. It's crazy to figure all this stuff out in a betting context.
Yeah, and you could say the same thing for Kentucky, who's usually right. The best traveler in the SEC, whether that thing's in Atlanta or Nashville or New Orleans or wherever. So that could certainly apply there as well.
And it's tough for us. It's you know, tough for the odds makers too. I mean, the nice thing is they can kind of put up a line and, you know, just react to what the market does. But I mean, this level of uncertainty, and it's tough too, because, you know, by and large, as bettors and handicappers, uncertainty, chaos, variance are all really good things for us, because if we've got a pretty good idea of what we think is going to happen and we're playing into a, you know, an uncertain market, a lot of times you get some good value out of that. But I mean, this is largely unprecedented for, you know, for the sports betting industry. And especially now with 16 states, Michigan today, Illinois just got it on Monday, with 16 states taking bets now. I mean, it's almost kind of overwhelming. And you know, again, we talk about, you know, paralysis by overanalysis and all that. Maybe we're all thinking too much about everything that's going on, and we're going to wind up missing some stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody, because there's no real uniform standard for something like this. So, I mean, certain people are going to do different things, not allowing spectators. Certain people are going to cancel events. Certain events, the show must go on. So, yeah, that's what makes it really weird and provides another yet unique challenge to us as bettors, is because different scenarios are going to happen here. So, The unknown, I mean, look, the betting market is like the stock market. The market often hates uncertainty, and that's really what we have going forward.
All right, so let's talk about the Players' Championship here down at TPC Sawgrass, and everything pretty much business as usual here. Obviously, there are some golf considerations further down the line, too, where, you know, we don't know if events will be played, won't be played, whatever. But this one is going on as scheduled, at least as of now. Rory's your 7-1 favorite. Rahm, the second favorite, 10-1. Justin Thomas in the 12-1 range. DeChambeau, 15 or so. Seen a little bit of love for Dustin Johnson this week. His price has come down. Patrick Cantlay, who I like, his price has come down from 25 to 18 or so. A lot of prices coming down for the bigger name players here this week.
Yeah, which does kind of surprise me a little bit, because this has been kind of a hit or miss tournament for top players. Was looking at some of the statistics and like little trends and little nuggets about this tournament. Rory McIlroy comes in as the defending champion, and he's the rightful favorite. He's got a top five streak or better in every event that he's played since early October. So it feels like he's going to get one pretty soon, just because of who he is and how well he's been playing. But he was the defending champion, as I mentioned, last year. No defending champion since Adam Scott back in 2005 has finished in the top 10 the following year at the Players' Championship, which I thought was really interesting. And then going through the different, usually most weeks on PGA Tour, you could find horses for courses and guys with really good course form that maybe are almost due a win, maybe guys that have. Well, he's been in the top 10 four times in the last 5 years here. Well, you could see that a player likes a certain course. But with this one, you've got ones that win and then miss the cut 3 of 5 years. So that's what makes this event a little bit more random and a little bit more of a crapshoot to handicap.
So as far as the types of players you were looking for, it's tough. I mean, bombers have won this. Technical guys have won this. Shorter hitters that just play fairways and greens have won this. What are you, I mean, did you lock in on a certain type of player, or are you just spread kind of all across the skill sets?
Yeah, I spread it around a little bit, because this is a Pete Dye course, design course, the late Pete Dye. And yeah, it tests all different forms of your game. So you've seen the big hitters, but you've seen the Tim Clarks and the Fred Funks win here too. Usually it's going to be a player of some class and not, you know, some random guy at the bottom, even though we saw Siwoo Kim win at 250-1 a couple years ago. But a lot of major champions and future major champions have won here. So, I mean, if you look at the guys that I played this week, all different kind of players. I played DeChambeau at around 25-1 as my shortest price I played here. Leads the tour in driving distance. He's kind of really worked on the length here, and it's paid off. He's leading the tour in distance. A big hitting guy that can shape some shots. And so I had him on there. And plus, that was a lot of a recent form play. This is a guy with three top fives in the last 4 weeks. So he looks like he's about ready to knock the door down for his next win. Gary Woodland, this is kind of a club down type of course where you can go usually one club down in terms of reaching greens and whatnot. You don't have to necessarily have driver on every hole. It's just under 7,200 yards. Gary Woodland, who's seen as a big hitter, but really the strength of his game is ball striking, hasn't won since the U.S. Open, hasn't played badly, but hasn't really been knocking down the door of another win yet. And sometimes maybe you get in a little bit of that after you break through and win something big like your first major like he did at the U.S. Open. But I played him at 60-1. Matt Fitzpatrick, not a very big hitter, but a very good ball striker and usually a pretty solid putter. I played him at 70-1. Fitzpatrick actually was the only player. Keep in mind, 69 players made the cut at Bay Hill, so there's 138 rounds on Saturday and Sunday combined with all those players. Fitzpatrick was the only player at Bay Hill to shoot a round in the 60s. One out of 138, and he's got a 69 on Sunday. So he's been flush in the ball lately, and I think he was just a guy I felt I had to have on the card. Daniel Berger played at 75-1, three straight top tens. He likes these Bermuda greens that are kind of overseeded with rye that take a little the bit of the graininess and make them smoother putting surfaces. So I used him. Abraham Anser, a guy that was respectable here on debut last year. I played him at 80-1, and then a couple guys in the 90-100-1 range. A couple European veterans, Sergio Garcia, former winner here, two-time runner-up, made 16 straight cuts here. He's about the closest guy to a course form guy as you get at Sawgrass because he's made 16 straight cuts here. So I thought he was a big enough price. And the same with Shane Lowry, who the defending Open champion, now finally over that hangover, as he calls it, that probably lasted about 2 or 3 months to win the biggest championship that a European player can win. But been consistent, finishing top 20s, top 30s in his starts here. So looks like he's starting to find something. I thought Lowry was decent value down the board.
Yeah, I like Woodland this week, too. Brian Blessing mentioned Fitzpatrick on yesterday's show. Also mentioned, I think he's got Fitzpatrick for the Masters as well. I had a pretty good price, too. So, some guys that we're kind of hearing about a couple of different times here this week on Bang the Book Radio for the Players' Championship. Hopefully, we wind up getting another one here like we got Tyrrell Hatton last week. But Wes Reynolds is working to find on Twitter, at Wes Reynolds on the number one, and hear him on VSiN. Wes, I'm sure it's a very busy schedule. We didn't talk XFL. I know you're still covering that for them. And obviously all this March Madness stuff going on too.
Yeah. Usually the normal times will be back on Friday night, 6-10 Pacific. We have the XFL Betcast, which you can go to vsin.com for the information and the scoop on that. And then Sunday, we're doing some different programming all day with the brackets being announced on Sunday. So I will be on the Edge with Matt Eumanns and Jeff Parles from 7-9 Pacific. And that's once, the brackets have already been out, and then, the NIT presumably will be out at that point too. So we'll be talking games and talking seedings probably more so the teams that got left out, because every year you can make an argument for a team that got left out that should have been in. But usually I think the committee gets it right on the selection of teams, maybe not so much with the seedings, but we'll be talking about that. So we'll be all over it all over the weekend.
Well, like I said, make sure you follow Wes on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, always a pleasure, sir.